Welcome back into the show, Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, with You're the Cure, of course, also brought to you by our good friends at Veritas Medical. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com, and you can always give us a call directly on our line at 1-855-6-VERITAS. That's 1-855-6-VERITAS. Let me say good morning once again to Dr. Ben Edwards. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Wade. I'm doing good.
Good to have you back on this Martin Luther King Day. There was some questions on whether or not we'd have a show today because it's a holiday. And I thought, well, we're going to do the show because it's important. And you have a special guest lined up this morning for the program. But by the way, if you have a question along the way, you can certainly give us a call at 745-5800, 745-5800. We can also take your texts over the text line as well, 806-745-5800 on that number through the next hour here on the show, which You're the Cure right here on AM 580. Okay, so our guest today on the program.
Well, our guest is a near and dear to my heart, Nelson Coulter.
Nelson Coulter with us.
Nelson is a man who's held many titles over the years: rancher, educator, author, musician, entrepreneur, coach, mentor, consultant, and professor. He has coached, taught, and been published in many settings, and he has served in public schools, which is where I met him, of all shapes and sizes and contexts, everything from the University of Texas at Austin to Wayland Baptist University to Guthrie ISD. Which is where Nelson and I met. However, his most cherished titles are the ones not attached to a career identity: son, husband, dad, and granddad.
Nice.
So Nelson's a great man and a great thinker. I kind of want to set this conversation up a little bit, reminding our listeners why I named the show You're the Cure, because the doctor really doesn't have the cure. And just a reminder that the Latin root of the word doctor or physician is teacher. So really our job is just to teach you what it is that's out of whack, meaning what is it that your body's lacking that it needs to function normally, or what is it being overexposed to that's impeding normal function. Those are the two things that we teach on. And then once we teach that and you implement the changes to correct those two things, your body fixes itself. You are the cure.
Absolutely.
So that being said, that kind of leads us to one of my favorite topics, and that is teaching kids and teaching moms and teaching teachers about this concept of functional medicine. I was able to give a talk last week to about 100 moms of preschool children, the organization here in town called MOPS, Mothers of Preschool Students. And I told those moms that I love giving talks to this kind of group because it's the moms that are going to change the world. When you can get moms educated and get them on board and let them understand the connection between food and inflammation and our health crisis, once they start changing their kitchen, those kids will be affected so much. But I also love talking to teachers because teachers kind of line up with moms.
Yeah.
The teachers and the school administrators, those are the two groups. If we can get moms, schools, and churches, probably the three groups, to understand this connection between food and inflammation and disease, then we'll have a hope at changing this healthcare fiasco and turning it around. It won't be the Democrats, Republicans, Obamacare, or Trump care, or any other politician care. It's going to be the people. And Nelson Coulter, to me, represents that. I was asked to come give a talk at his school a few years ago at Guthrie when Nelson was a superintendent there. And he just really grabbed a hold of these concepts and dove in with both feet and started reading books and understanding and implementing some changes at the school. So that's what I wanted to talk about today. He has since retired from the superintendent position, but I really want the listeners to hear his story and to be encouraged that one person can make a big difference. So, Nelson, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, good morning, Doc. Good to talk to you again.
Good talking to you. I want to start, Nelson, I kind of gave that brief intro, but if you could give a little synopsis of kind of your history, where you came from and how you got to where you are now, just so our listeners kind of get more of a feel for who you are as a man.
Short version is, I was raised in a small West Texas town near San Angelo, to working class parents, the oldest of four boys. Very traditional schooling experience, although I was a first-generation degree earner. And I got so busy earning degrees, I just kept earning degrees till I ran out of opportunities for other degrees to earn. And went into a professional career of education right after graduating from Angelo State University in 1980. And now I'm in my 37th year of service to public schools, although for the last year and a half I've been formally retired. But through through that series of service, I was a teacher, my math teacher was one of the things, my primary subject matter, a math teacher, an athletic coach, athletic director, assistant principal, principal, superintendent, and professor. Now I serve as a consultant, now that I'm retired, to several school districts and education service centers around the state. But my personal health pathway was one that you're familiar with, which and because I was an athletic coach, I accepted the rationale throughout my entire life up until about 4 years ago that I had the ability, if I had the discipline, I had the ability to exercise enough to eat whatever I wanted and remain healthy. And as many people have experienced, I found that extremely difficult, although I never was one of those people. I exercised quite a lot, both running and weight training. But I was never able to seem to keep my health at peak. It seemed like I was always behind the curve on that process. Although I always seemed, from the outside looking in, also seemed to maintain a reasonably good health over the years. But once I started approaching the age of 50 and also working some very high-pressure jobs, large high school principals inside the city limits of Austin, I began developing hypertension, sleep disorders, having increased difficulty managing my weight, and those kinds of things. I now know that was the insidious effects of stress and poor nutrition, not lack of exercise, because I was doing that, inflammation, as you mentioned in your intro a few minutes ago. But from the things I've learned from you and other physicians like you over the last 4 years, I increasingly came to the conclusion that my health, as you so aptly noted, is my own responsibility, whereas for about four decades, I assumed the people that were selling me food and medicine really had my health interest in mind, which now I know that they really had the health of their bottom line in mind, and that if I was going to be healthy, then it was going to be my own personal responsibility. So that pathway kind of brought me to the meeting that you and I had some 4 years ago. But the long story is, my history, my professional career was one of educator, and I still view myself as that. I'm still actively involved in teaching at the college level, especially preparing people to be school principals and school superintendents. But for the last 25 years, my wife and I have also been part-time ranchers, and in the early years of that, it was a commercial endeavor, trying to raise beef cattle. And build our assets to the point to where when we retired from our professional careers, we would have a way of maintaining a lifestyle that we wanted. And also through what we've learned from you and others like you, not only were we, I shouldn't use the word misled, maybe I was just naively in the dark with regard to my own personal health, but I was also naively in the dark in relation to agriculture and sustainable practices in that regard. So So the pathway that my wife and I have grown down with regard to being ag producers has been just as dramatic and just as remarkable to us as has been our understanding about our own personal life. So we kind of ended up on this dual pathway of learning with regard to our personal health, and at the same time gaining a deeper understanding and more appreciation for our responsibility for the health and well-being of the land of which we are now the stewards, and the thousands of beating hearts that stand on that land that we own, or we pretend to own. So I'll stop now, and you can ask me more specific questions if you want.
Okay, well, that's great. I mean, that's a great overview, a great summary, and you're kind of leading us up to the two subjects I really want to focus on in the rest of the time, which is the health and then the agricultural part too. So let's start with just, I'd like the listeners to hear kind of the initial steps in your health journey, and specifically when, I forget exactly who connected us, I think one of your teachers maybe, but when you asked me to come give a talk there at Guthrie, and then what you saw as you implemented and encouraged your staff to implement some changes, and then the changes you implemented in the cafeteria at the school, and the health changes you saw in some of your staff and students, and then let's talk about the agricultural piece. So I can't believe it was 4 years ago that you said when we met, time flies. But basically, I remembered as you emailed me and said, could you come give a talk? And what I recall when I showed up that day is you kind of introduced me and said something along the lines of, I usually never invite someone to come give a talk that I haven't heard give a talk before, because I kind of need to vet them. So let's sit back and listen to this guy and see what he has to say. And I remember the whole time I was thinking, I wonder what Nelson's thinking about all this, because it's kind of crazy talk when you tell people to eat more fat and don't eat whole grain.
Right.
Tell us about some of the things as I initially came to your school and gave the talk, and as you learned even from others, and what you implemented there at the school.
Well, the catalyst for the first meeting between you and me actually began in December of 2012. My lovely bride and I have been married almost 40 years now, but at that time we had only been married like 35 or 36. But December 2012, she and I were drinking coffee one morning at our ranch, and she said, "Nelson, I think," and by the way, she's a lot smarter person than I am, but she said, "Nelson, I think we need to make a change in the way we eat." And I like to believe that one of the reasons I've been able to stay married to her for so long is I pretty much just agree with whatever she wants me to do. And so I said, "Okay, dear, what do you have in mind?" And she said, "I think we need to remove processed sugar from our diet." Well, that was a bit of a shocker to me, because although I was not obese, I was a sugarholic. I mean, I would go to restaurants and eat my way through the regular menu just so I could get to the dessert. And whenever I would travel, with my snacks would be Jelly Beans Diet Cokes or Orange Slices Diet Cokes. I mean, I loved sugar in all its forms. And so I agreed to what she said to do, but once I agreed, I began to get a little bit panicky. So for the next several months, she and I began removing processed sugar from our diet, and a weight began melting off of both of us. We began to feel positive effects of, and now I know what it was insidious inflammation throughout my body, but feeling better, joints feeling better. And she had suffered for years with arthritic problems and feet, joints, knees, hands. Those things began disappearing little by little. And I thought, man, this is remarkable. Well, after a few months of that, and she began learning more about it through the likes of Dr. Hyman, who you recommend quite often, Dr. Roby Mitchell up at Amarillo, who is a colleague of yours as well, we began studying the thinking and the works of these people. And it began having a huge impact on our understanding about our personal health. And then that the spring of that following that December, during the late spring and summer is when principals and superintendents began thinking about professional development for their teachers in August when they come back and prepare for the new school year. And in that interim, I had had an encounter with a former student of mine, a lady that I had been her high school principal in Jayton, Texas. You know her as Stephanie Allen.
Yeah.
She's the wife of Cody Allen, and I had an exchange with Stephanie, and she told me some of the cool things that they were doing at Vertical Turbine Specialists, where her husband and her father-in-law lead the endeavors there. And remarkable stuff with regard to the health of their employees. And in that conversation, Stephanie just happened to say to me that they had found a position that we're going to set up on site there at Vertical Turbine Specialist on their campus. And she began talking about the kind of thinking and the services they were providing to their employees with regard to their health. And I had heard your name through some other teachers who had begun working with you when you were still at Post. And as Stephanie began talking about that position that they found, it was just remarkable in the way he thought about health. I finally said, Stephanie, and I need to add one more piece of the puzzle here. I worked in a collaborative of seven superintendents out between Wichita Falls and Lubbock in a small school consortium, and one of those happened to be a superintendent that was an uncle to your wife.
Right.
And he had dealt with some remarkable health problems, which I had observed up close and personal, and had seen significant upticks in his personal health when he began taking the advice that you were offering. And not traditional or conventional medical advice, for the most part. And so it was sort of a confluence of events that brought me to the point to where I was ready to reach out to you. One, my wife had pushed us away from the shore on a personal journey of improved health. Two, my conversation with Stephanie and my awareness of what was going on at Vertical Turbine Specialist with regard to the health, the institution's interest in the personal health of its employees. Three, watching that superintendent that I knew personally begin overcoming significant health problems, and I knew that it was because of advice that was coming through you. I'm sitting there in late spring thinking about what kind of professional learning do I want to craft for the adults that are going to be teaching the students of Guthrie Common School District. And I told my wife, I said, I do not normally invite someone that I have not heard speak to stand up in front of people. I said, but I feel like I've got some reasonably verifiable sources here that I'm going to reach out to Ben Edwards and see if he'll come speak to our teachers about the power of personal health on not only on their long-term health, but also the derivative effects on the organization. And in our case, our organization was in the business of teaching children. So I reached out to you, and you most graciously agreed. And I gave you a terrible time slot, which was right after lunch.
I remember that.
On the last day of the work week, that was a Thursday, I believe, if I recall correctly, that week. And I told you I was going to give you an hour and a half to speak. You asked for more, or you indicated that you really needed.
Shocker.
You really needed more. Yeah. You indicated you really needed more, but I was a crusty old superintendent and said, no, this is it. You got 90 minutes to tell us what you want to tell. So you showed up and spoke for 9 minutes, and then you stopped, and you're always tightly scheduled. I mean, you had to leave, you know, pretty soon. Before you got out the door, teachers and staff were lining up to me, and some of them in tears. I still distinctly remember it. Some of them in tears, saying, "This is exactly what I need. This is exactly what I've been looking for." And I can remember in particular the lady that was responsible for our cafeteria, tears streaming down her face, saying, "Nelson, I've been looking for this. Y'all have to forgive me. I'm getting a little emotional talking about it here. I've been looking for this for decades." And during that 90 minutes, I knew at that moment in time, after you walked out the door and the impact, the immediate effects I saw in the adults in that group, I knew I'd done the right thing by inviting you. And I also, it's one of those moments in your life when you realize you've done something that you really didn't know what you were doing, but it was a good thing. But I also realized then that all of a sudden, not only had my wife and I pushed away from the shore on our personal health, that we, I had stepped off onto a journey in organizational health that I really was not fully aware of what was going to be entailed. You left. We began accelerating our education. One of the books you mentioned during that 90-minute session was Wheat Belly by Dr. William Davis. My wife bought it and read it, and as soon as she read it, she said, "Nelson, I think you're going to want to read this." So I read it. This was October of 2013, after you had been with us in August of 2013. It had a bigger impact on me than the speaking and writing of Dr. Robert Lustig, who is, you know, he's engaged in war against sugar. And Dr. Davis makes a pretty strong case that wheat is bad, at least in its current form, for our general health. My wife and I agreed that we needed to begin removing processed grains from our diet, which was even more difficult. So that journey began in October of 2013. So now I had removed processed sugar from my diet in December of 12. We decided to remove processed grains from our diet, particularly wheat, in October of 13. And by January of 14, I had been able to completely come off of blood pressure medication. Without even trying, I just realized it one day that I had gone months without taking an over-the-counter painkiller, whereas previously there was not a single day that I didn't take either aspirin or Tylenol or ibuprofen at some point during the day. And I had, for a decade, taken antacids at the advice of my physician in Austin, because I had a persistent acid reflux and heartburn. There was a rare night that I could go to bed and stay in my bed the whole night. Most nights, I would take an antacid before I went to bed. I would sleep 3 or 4 hours, and then I'd sit up in a chair to be able to get some kind of rest for the remainder of the night. I came off of those too. And all of this stuff began happening to me within a window of about three or four months, particularly after hearing you speak, after removing processed sugars, and after removing processed grain. So in the spring of the school year of 2014, the lady that ran our cafeteria there in Guthrie and I began, because she was experiencing the same things, and she was involved in personal health research just as much as we were, particularly around nutrition. So she and I began having conversations. Here's the deal, Wade and Dr. Edwards. When it was just about me and my wife and our health, there was one thing. And when we began seeing the positive effects and began talking to our adult daughters and their husbands and knowing that they're raising our five grandchildren, you know, that raised the level of import even more as we began sharing. As I heard a lady on a TED Talk about this very subject last year, she said, you know, the thing that happened was I came to the realization that I cannot unlearn what I've learned. I cannot disregard the power of this knowledge. And so it went from a priority level of our personal health to that of our family. But then I began to have the creeping realization that I was the leader of an organization charged with educating, raising hundreds of children. And thus, I was responsible for the health and well-being not only of myself, but also that of the people that worked in that organization and for the health and well-being of the children that we were charged with educating.
Well,
and so all that stuff began piling on one after the other, and as I was having conversations with the lady that ran our cafeteria, I said, we cannot just take care of our own nutrition. We have to be thinking about the adults and the children that come in this building every day and be making the same kinds of decisions on their behalf that we're making on our own. So that's kind of what brought you and I together.
Yeah, and that's awesome. I mean, that's a beautiful story that really lays out the foundation of this transformation down in Guthrie. We've got to take one quick break, and I think it's a perfect time for a little break here. And when we come back, we'll talk about what you did in the school, what the lunchroom ladies did, and just all the effects of that. So we'll be right back.
Special guest on the show today, former superintendent of Guthrie ISD, Nelson Coulter, here on the program. Interesting talk about what the changes, and we're going to get into this next segment. We got about 20 minutes left to go in today's broadcast, but maybe get into exactly the changes that were implemented within the school district there. So glad to have Nelson on the program today, Dr. Edwards.
Yep, thank you, Wade. Nelson, we'll just shoot it back to you. Basically, we left off there with you were seeing personal health improvements, and some of your faculty was too, in particular the lunchroom ladies, and you were starting to understand and realize you being the leader of this ship, not only all the adult staff, but all the kids too. So you had some motivation now to move this truth that you were learning into the institution. So take it from there.
Okay, well, thank you, Wade, and Dr. Edwards. Once I began realize the importance and the weight of my responsibility, not only to educate children, but also I began to realize my responsibility for the health and well-being. I keep using that phrase, the health and well-being of both the adults working with those children and the children themselves. And as I began having more and more conversations about what we were with our cafeteria director, about what we were putting across the counter at breakfast and lunch every day there at Guthrie, I began to realize that I could no longer be an agent in setting those children and the adults that were working with them on a long-term path of illness by virtue of what I was authorizing that they were being fed every day. And yeah, that'll make you draw up a little bit when you start thinking about that. But it was not only about the health and well-being of those people today, but I was thinking about, and all five of my grandkids go to that school, I was also thinking about their health 5 decades down the road after they've already buried me. And the cafeteria director and I began making changes. You know, at first, it was little stuff like getting rid of the margarine and serving real butter. And it was like deciding to serve only grass-fed beef instead of beef from commercial feedlots, which in Guthrie, I mean, King County is nothing but ranches, so it was pretty easy for me to figure out how to get some grass-fed beef. But the more we looked at it, the more difficult it became because you may or may not be familiar with the National School Lunch Program, but you are familiar with Big Pharma.
Yes.
And you understand the entanglement between Big Pharma and public policy, both at the state and federal level. And we began seeing the same sort of kinds of entanglements between food manufacturers, big ag, and public policy. And little by little, month by month, I increasingly came to the realization that much of what was going on in the National School Lunch Program was in order to sustain the well-being of big ag and food manufacturers, and not so much about the sustainability of health for the children in the schools.
Well, let me ask you a question about that, if you don't mind, Nelson. Jump in here for a second.
Yeah.
What about the Michelle Obama, First Lady's idea about revamping the school lunch program? Did it not meet the expectations that you thought that should be done? I mean, there was a lot of conversation out there about, well, you know, she just wanted to put carrots out on everybody's plate and all this kind of stuff, but. What was your opinion of that, and did it ever really gain any traction? I don't see anything really significant came out of it, other than the fact that she was trying to highlight good eating. But you know, what about the what about that?
Right. Well, actually, Wade, I believe Mrs. Obama was she was ahead of me by a few years in her thinking. And her initiative basically got launched in the beginning of 2012.
Right.
And I believe her thinking was right and her intentions were noble, but I also believe she got undermined based on what I have learned since and what I've read since. Corporate interest undercut her intentions. To make sure that public policy continued to serve the needs of corporate interest, she got undercut. And what her initiative ended up turning into, let's just move. You know, it shifted back away from a food-centric perspective, a nutrition-centric perspective, and it ended up being a movement-centric perspective. And I don't think it's because that's what she wanted. I think the political realities were that she could not get done what she wanted done on a scale that she believed was needed because she couldn't compete with corporate interest in the halls of Congress. Now, that's going to sound crazy, I know, but I believe that's the reality. But I actually believe her intentions were proper and good, and she had a pretty good understanding. I saw the same thing happening with Susan Combs here in Texas back about 10 years ago when she was the ag commissioner and made some pretty significant steps with regard to serving sodas at schools and sizes of sodas and getting juices into the vending machines, not only soda. She met the same sort of big money resistance at the legislative level. So anyway, what happened to us at Guthrie is I came to the realization that I could no longer try to comply with the school lunch program. And that's what made me different than most superintendents. And here comes that entanglement thing. School lunches are subsidized by the federal government. Every superintendent and every school I know is short on resources. So to make a decision to, you know, I'm going to divorce the school lunch program is in effect a decision to, you know what, I don't want your money, keep it. Not many superintendents or school boards can take that step or willing to even think about taking that step.
Right, yeah.
But because of the conversations that we had been having at Guthrie, and I was having those conversations with our school board, we were seeing not only, I credit Dr. Edwards' visit to us there in August of 2013 as the critical trigger. We were seeing adults in that building experiencing the same things that I had been experiencing with regard to their personal health marker improvements. Just from little things like giving up soda or cutting out sugar or deciding to eat real healthy fats instead of vegetable oils. Little things, one by one. But all that stuff, we began seeing improvements in the health of the adults. And with each passing month, the cafeteria director and I began, we would make a few more changes about what we were putting across the counter. Till the summer of 2014, at that same August professional development that Ben had been with us a year before, I asked, and I had managed to forge a partnership with Natural Grocers out of Lubbock to supply us with some of the organic produce, because that was impossible to find through the conventional vendors at the time anyway. I asked the lady that was on staff at Natural Grocers as the nutritionist, and Dr. Edwards knows her. Her name is Rachel Atkinson, and she's a nutrition coach as well as a yogi there in Lubbock.
Yeah, we know her.
She and the manager, Adam Nolan, of Natural Grocers came out and also did a session for our professional development in August of 2014. And it had also a very similar impact to Dr. Edwards' conversation. And I remember as soon as that day was over, when they were there, I sat down with our cafeteria director and I said, Pat, I'm done. We can no longer let any item cross our school lunch counter that you and I would not eat ourselves. And I understood what I was saying to her. We can't comply with the school lunch program. And so that set in motion the wheels for us to divorce from the National School Lunch Program, which meant Guthrie was going to have to fund their own lunches and breakfasts without the aid of federal money in the interest of the health and well-being of our children. And so that initiated a very interesting phone conversation I had with a person at the Texas Department of Agriculture who sort of administers the school lunch program. At about a 20-minute long conversation with her about why we needed to divorce that program, and she said okay, but she kept quizzing me about what we were doing. You know, what are you doing? Well, we're only going to serve organic produce. She said, we don't have a problem with that. I said, I didn't think you would. And she says, what else are you doing? I said, we're only going to serve grass-fed, grass-finished meats. And she says, we don't have a problem with that. I said, I didn't think you would. And she says, what else are you going to do? I said, we're only going to serve real, whole, organic milk. No skim milk, no 2% milk, no strawberry milk, no chocolate milk. And she went, oh, wait a minute, we won't like that. And I said, I know, that's why we're having this conversation. And she said, what else are you doing? I said, we are not going to give our kids 6 doses of processed grains every day. We might give them one, but we're going to look for organic choices. And she said, well, that wouldn't be in compliance. And I said, I know.
Wow.
That's why we have to quit. But at the end of that 20-minute conversation, she understood where we were going and why. And I said, ma'am, I know you don't know me from Adam, And I know you probably think I'm crazy. And she said, no, actually, you sound exactly like my oncologist. And I said, you have cancer. And she said, well, I'm a 3-year survivor. And my cancer doctor has been telling me 3 years to eat exactly like you're talking about. But you won't be in compliance with the school lunch program. I said, that's why we're quitting. And that started us on a whole new level of learning and changing the way and development of the school garden at Guthrie. If you go out to Guthrie now, they raise a bunch of their own produce. They pick it in the summer with the help of students, process it, freeze it, or, you know, turn it into tomato sauce or whatever they're doing. But much of their food is homegrown out there now. But it's a wonderful thing to see. Interestingly enough, when I retired a year and a half ago, I got so many very nice comments and notes from the people that I had worked with out there. And the preponderance of them had to do with the impact I'd had on the health of them and their families, and not so much as the impact I'd had on their instructional prowess. I told my wife, I said, you know, after 35 years of working in education, I thought my impact would be on the way teaching and learning it happens, but it seems like it might have been more about on helping people understand the power of their health and well-being and the impact on all the other parts of their lives. So I mentioned to you earlier that I still am involved in the teaching of people preparing to be principals and superintendents in the state. And that this very thing has become a prominent component in my teaching of those people. Their responsibility first for their own health and well-being, because they cannot perform optimally unless they are well. And secondly, their responsibility, because they are organizational leaders, for the health and well-being of the people for which God has allowed them to be the stewards. And it's interesting conversations that we have, because so many of them were the same place I was 10 years ago, on the hamster cage, running as fast as they can, eating crap 3 times a day, trying to run 5 miles to offset that.
Right.
Not sleeping enough, thinking if I get by with 5 hours of sleep, then I can get more stuff done. I'm telling you, it's an insidious, detriment to a person's health and well-being, their ability to work well cognitively, physically, and emotionally.
Well said.
Okay, you guys asked me a question.
Very, very well said. Nelson, we've got 5 minutes left, but I want you to touch on that physical, cognitive, you know, that performance in the kids. You or someone from school had mentioned, you know, the kids in football, their performance academically, attendance-wise, sick, days absent, people cleaning their lunch tray in the lunchroom instead of dumping half their food in the can. Talk a little bit about the students and what you saw in the 5 minutes we have left.
So at the beginning of, in August of 2014, we had basically cleaned up all the food that we were sending across the counter there at Guthrie Common School District. And I began immediately hearing anecdotal things from folks like the football coaches, you know, who were telling me, we have afternoon workouts, of course, and in August and September, it's still, you know, approaching 100 degrees. But they were telling me, never before have we seen the players have such ability to stay focused and attentive and energetic through the end of practice. They've always hit that crash, that low, which I knew what it was. It was because of the high-carb stuff at lunch, you know, and they just crash. But we began hearing parents saying, when they would pick up their children after practice, saying, you know, last year Billy was caving in. I had to take food to him so he'd have something to eat in the car on the way home, and now he's fine. He's good until we have dinner at 7 o'clock that night. And it was the fast burn versus the slow burn food that we were serving, and I know that. We also began. I always invited people to visit our schools, no matter where I was, the principal or the superintendent. And we had folks from the Education Service Center there in Lubbock come out and visit one day, two of them. And I mean, their job is to be on campuses all over Region 17, around about 59 campus districts around Lubbock. And they stood there with me at lunch, and they weren't even visiting about lunch. They were there on instructional mission. And at the end of their day, before they left, they said, you know, we go in schools all the time, and it is unbelievable the amount of food that gets thrown away into the trash cans after lunch. But we stood there in your cafeteria, and we watched kid after kid after kid come by, and their plates were licked clean. And I said, yeah. And they wanted to know why. And I told them, of course. And I said, and I'll tell you one more thing. We give them all they want to eat. Our logic is, if they're eating good, clean, healthy fats, organic produce, healthy food, we don't care if they have two hamburgers. If it's healthy food, we don't care. Knowing also that nutritious food is more satisfying anyway. But so we began hearing all those kinds of things, but it also set me too on another journey, and this one I did not anticipate, because when you start taking strawberry milk and chocolate milk away from children's breakfast and no longer have Fruit Loops or Cocoa Puffs, parents are going to want to know what's going on. So it started me also on a journey of having to educate our community and parents about what we were doing. And I did not anticipate that component. Once you make those significant kinds of changes in the cafeteria, it has rippling effects in the homes of those children. And once we start telling our children at school, you know, I'll just use these as examples, you know, Fruit Loops and Cocoa Puffs are not doing you any good, then the parents are hearing that too, and they're going to want to, what are you teaching my kids? And so I had to embark on a journey, and Dr. Edwards is very aware of this. It seems like once you get on one educational journey, all of a sudden you branch off and you got another one, and then you got another one, and then you got another one, until you don't know if you can see the end in sight. But it's good work. It's noble work, and I'm still on it. I'm still on that journey.
All right.
Well, that's awesome, Nelson. I mean, what a remarkable story, and the impact you've had on so many lives. It's a real testament to what one person can do. And I really do want to get you back on the schedule to have you back to talk more about the part we didn't get to, in particular with what you're doing now beyond consulting with schools, but in the agricultural part and the permaculture and everything you've learned there. This is kind of the ag station for the West Texas area, and there's such a relationship between agriculture and food, and food and as our medicine and health. So definitely want to get you back. But thank you so much for sharing. I think this show will be listened to by a lot of folks and a lot of leaders of different organizations, not only schools but companies, and it can be a real catalyst for change, I think. So thanks again for joining us today and for sharing your story. It was incredible. Incredible.
It's been a pleasure. I'll be glad to join you again. And as you know, I'm a fan of your work. Any way I can help you accomplish your goals, I'm prepared to do it.
Well, thank you, sir, very much. And it is our goal to spread the message that there is a different way to practice medicine, a different way to take care of your health than kind of what we've been conventionally trained in, that I was conventionally trained to do in medical school. There's always those folks who will want to treat a symptom and not get to the root cause of the problem and just manage their problem. But for those who see the long-term consequences of management versus reversal of disease, and they want a different way to go, now I feel it's my obligation to get out there and present this to people so they know there is another option, because right now most people don't even understand that there's this other option of get to the root of it and fix it. But it's all about education, and it's all about the patient taking responsibility. So, and I think that's a powerful message that you explained well today, so thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Enjoyed being with you.
You bet, Nelson. We appreciate it. Of course, Nelson and Coulter, everybody. And Nelson, have a wonderful rest of the week, and we look forward to seeing you back here at some point during the in the future on You're the Cure program with Dr. Ben Edwards. We appreciate you being with us on today's broadcast.
All right. Glad to be with you guys. Have a good day.
Have a great week. All right, Dr. Edwards, we'll see you back here next Monday on the show, 9 o'clock, bright and early, right here on AM 580. Stick around now. Unconfused coming up next right here on AM 580. Don't forget to check out the website, veritasmedical.com. That's veritasmedical.com.